This is Jeff Blankford, welcoming you to the September 14th edition of Takes on the World, a program on international affairs that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays each month and every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phone to get your takes on the world, one of which happened last month. Well, last week was a busy one for President Obama and worth paying more attention to than the antics of the two leading presidential candidates, since even after his 8 years in office, some people remain confused about who he is and, as he likes to say, who we are as a people. First, you no doubt heard or read about President Obama being rudely treated on arrival at the Beijing airport for the G20 summit and is being insulted by the new president of the Philippines. What I found more interesting was a Malaysian student at a youth conference in Laos, broadcast on C-SPAN, who expressed her solidarity with the indigenous people defending their ancestral land in North Dakota, who asked the president what he was doing to help them. That question attracted a round of applause from her fellow students and may have been what forced the president and the U.S. media to begin paying attention to the protests of the Sioux Nation's Standing Rock in North Dakota against the building of an oil pipeline under their sacred lands, which would threaten their only source of water. Despite the arrival of thousands of Native and non-Native American supporters from across the U.S. and Canada, there had been not a word from the president or the two major party presidential candidates vying to succeed him, nor apparently had they been asked about the protest that has been ongoing since April, which tells you as much about the U.S. media as it does about Obama, Clinton, and Trump. The Green Party candidates Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka, however, visited the protest site, and after expressing their solidarity, Stein wrote, "I approve this message on the side of one of the pipeline company's bulldozers." That was enough to earn Stein and her running mate, Ajamu Baraka, arrest warrants for their criminal trespass and criminal mischief from a corporation-friendly North Dakota judge. But I want to focus on Obama. "That's a great question," he enthusiastically responded to the Malaysian student, but it was evident he knew nothing about it. To cover up his ignorance or indifference, he started bragging about what his administration had done for Native Americans before finally admitting, quote, "I can't give you the details on this particular case. I'd have to get back to my staff and see how we're doing on this one," end quote. The Malaysian student's question may have helped to temporarily save the day for the Standing Rock Sioux and their allies. On Friday, after federal judge James Boasberg ruled against the Sioux's appeal for restraining orders, stating that the 1,200-mile oil pipeline project could continue, the Department of Justice and the Army, etc., tiptoed in, asking the oil pipeline company to voluntarily cease construction pending, quote, "serious discussion on whether there should be a nationwide reform with respect to considering tribes' views on these types of infrastructure projects," end quote. Recalling their long experience with the federal government, the Sioux protests and the encampments of their supporters will continue on the site. Well, now what is needed is an intrepid reporter among those approved for presidential press conferences when he has them, who would ask President Obama to justify Washington's material, intelligence, and political support for Saudi Arabia's unrelenting and barbaric air war on the people of Yemen and his decision announced last month to sell the oil monarchy another $1.15 billion in weapons to continue that war. That's on top of the $115 billion the Obama administration has already sold to the Saudis since the Nobel Peace Prize winner came into office. On Monday, Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul and Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy introduced SJ Res 39 as a joint resolution intended to block the latest deal. Paul said a sale like this, quote, "to a country with poor human rights record, embroiled in a bitter war, is a recipe for disaster and an escalation of an ongoing arms race in the region," end quote. That only hints at the problem. Today at 20 minutes past the hour, I'll be speaking with Harper's Washington editor Andrew Coburn about his article in the current edition of the magazine entitled "Acceptable Losses, Aiding and Abetting the Saudi Slaughter in Yemen." So stay tuned for that. Let's get back to President Obama and his trip to Laos. Since we have no Lewis Carroll or Jonathan Swift to interpret that extraordinary visit or the times we live in, we are left with the output of New York Times reporters. Quote, "In a recent briefing with reporters," writes Max Fisher in a news section column, he writes, called The Interpreter, "Susan Rice, the president's national security advisor, said, quote, a hallmark of the president's tenure has been to face and acknowledge our history," end quote. That history, she said, has included, quote, points of departure from the United States, quote, overwhelmingly positive role in the world. Where that's the case, we should acknowledge it. This practice, she added, serves our interests and our relationships and our ability to move beyond the past in some of these places, end quote. What America will never do, she failed to say, is apologize or pay reparations for its war crimes. When President Obama became the first American president to visit Hiroshima this past summer, he kept to that policy. He said, 71 years ago, on a bright, cloudless morning, death fell from the sky and the world was changed. A flash of light in the wall of fire destroyed a city and demonstrated that mankind possessed the means to destroy itself, end quote. Not exactly, Mr. President. It was to demonstrate the United States had such a weapon and the means to destroy any country that might challenge it. Well, why do we come to this place, to Hiroshima, Obama asked rhetorically. We come to ponder a terrible force unleashed in a not-so-distant past. We come to mourn the dead, including over 100,000 Japanese men, women, and children, thousands of Koreans, and a dozen Americans held prisoner. Their souls speak to us, he said. They ask us to look inward to take stock of who we are and what we might become, end quote. Well, if they do that, Mr. President, might they not also expect the country responsible, which you represent, to say we are sorry for having caused that disaster? But of course he could not, and should not have apologized, said those who wrapped themselves in the flag. The Japanese, they said, should have thought about the likely consequences of attacking the United States. Well, a side note, Pearl Harbor in Hawaii was not part of the continental United States, but an independent island nation taken by military force from its indigenous inhabitants in 1893, as was the rest of America, and like the rest of America, done without apology. Okay, if one grants that the Japanese were the aggressors in 1941, and thus not meriting an apology from Uncle Sam, what should an American president say about the U.S. so-called secret war in Laos? Not a secret from anyone but Americans, of course. Certainly not from the Laotians and their neighbors in the region who are also getting bombed. This is in part what Obama said to those who heard him in the country's capital, Vientiane, last week, a careful skirting of as much truth and responsibility as he could get away with. Well, I realize, he said, having a U.S. president in Laos would never have once been imaginable. 6 decades ago, this country fell in the Civil War. And as the fighting raged next door in Vietnam, your neighbors and foreign powers, including the United States, intervened here, so said Obama. Not including the United States, Mr. President, the foreign power was the United States. Well, at the time, he continued, the U.S. government did not acknowledge America's role. It was a secret war, and for years, the American people did not know. Even now, many Americans are not fully aware of this chapter in our history and it's important that we remember today, end quote. Who do you mean by we? If the president wanted Americans to remember, let alone care about that war, this speech should have been given from the White House on U.S. television, not across the ocean to those who know what happened, and which those who lived through it cannot forget. Well, back to Obama. Over 9 years, from 1964 to 1973, he continued, the United States dropped more than 2 million tons of bombs here in Laos, more than we dropped on Germany and Japan combined during all of World War II. It made Laos, per person, the most heavily bombed country in history. As one Laotian said, the bombs fell like rain. Villages and entire valleys were obliterated. The ancient plain of Jars was devastated. Countless civilians were killed. And that conflict, he said, was another reminder that whatever the cause, whatever our intentions, war inflicts a terrible toll, especially on innocent men, women, and children, end quote. Well, today, he says, I stand with you in acknowledging the suffering and sacrifices on all sides of that conflict, end quote. No, Mr. President, war did not inflict the terrible toll. The United States Air Force did that, and acknowledging the suffering and sacrifices on all sides was not nearly enough since it was not nearly equal. You needed to say we were wrong, that as the President of the United States, the country's government and armed forces were wholly responsible for these terrible war crimes against the people who had never harmed or threatened us, that you were sorry. But the President has still more to say. Our new partnership, he said, will continue to deal with a painful legacy of war. And on behalf of the American people, especially our veterans and military families, I want to thank the government and people of Laos for your humanitarian cooperation as we work together to account for Americans missing in action. And I'm pleased that, as a result of this visit, we will increase our efforts and bring more of our missing home to their families in America. I also know that the remnants of war continues to shatter lives here in Laos. Many of the bombs that were dropped were never exploded. Over the years, thousands of Laotians, he said, have been killed or injured, farmers tending their fields, children playing. The wounds, a missing leg or arm, last a lifetime. And that's why, as president, I've dramatically increased our funding to help remove these unexploded bombs. As a result, Laos is clearing more bombs. Fewer Laotians are being hurt or killed. And together we are saving lives. But there's still much more work to do, said the president. So today I'm proud to announce an historic increase in these efforts. The United States will double our annual funding to $90 million over the next 3 years to help Laos expand its work. Words from those attending, according to the White House. This will help Laos expand its work to remove even more bombs, allow Laotians to farm more land, and increase support for victims. I'll bear witness to this work tomorrow when I meet with survivors. Given our history here, I believe the United States has a moral obligation to help Laos heal. And even as we continue to deal with the past, our new partnership is focused on the future, end quote. Increase to $90 million over 3 years? While Israel alone gets $8 million a day and in a deal signed today, it will get $38 billion over 10 years and $12 billion at the same time Laos is getting its $90 million. Mr. Obama, have you no sense of shame, no sense of decency, no need to do what's right? Of course not. That's why Wall Street, the weapons manufacturers, and Israel lobby selected him to be president, to put a human-friendly mask on U.S. imperialism, and he keeps fooling a lot of people. And what he offered a country that should have received many billions of reparations over the passing years was what they call on the street chump change. What the multinational corporations' traveling salesman speech was really about was reserved for the end. We believe in prosperity, he said, that is shared and reduces poverty and inequality by lifting up the many and not just a few wealthy people at the top. Rather than simply extracting another country's natural resources, we believe development has to invest in people, in their education and in their skills. We believe, said Obama, that trade should be free and truly fair, and that workers and the environment should be protected. And that's the kind of development and the kind of trade that we seek. That's why, he said, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is so important, not only because TPP countries, including the United States, will be able to sell more goods to each other, but it also has important strategic benefits. TPP is a core pillar of America's rebalance to the Asia-Pacific. And the trade, he said, and the growth it supports will reinforce America's security alliances and regional partnerships. It will build greater integration and trust across this region. And I have said before, said the president, and I will say again, failure to move ahead with TPP would not just have economic consequences, but would call into question America's leadership in this vital region, end quote. That is as good a reason as any to oppose it, I would say, since what almost everything America has done in and to that region since the end of World War II is a disaster, and that has been true under Obama's administration as much as it was under those who preceded him. And you could say the same for the Middle East, Latin America, and Africa. At Hiroshima, Obama had also said, "We may not be able to eliminate man's capacity to do evil, so nations and the alliances that we form must possess the means to defend themselves. But among those nations, like my own," he said, "that hold nuclear stockpiles, we must have the courage to escape the logic of fear and pursue a world without them. We may not realize this goal in my lifetime, but persistent effort can roll back the possibility of catastrophe. We can chart a course that leads to the destruction of these stockpiles," end quote. Not only has President Obama made fewer moves in that direction than any president before him, Earlier this year, he committed the country to a multi-year program to upgrade America's nuclear arsenal that is estimated to cost $1 trillion, which will include the development of a cruise missile capable of carrying a nuclear or conventional warhead. What Obama plans to leave as his legacy are 1,000 new missiles with adjustable nuclear capacities, 100 new long-range bombers, and a new fleet of nuclear-armed submarines. Most depressing, wrote award-winning journalist John Kinzer in the Boston Globe back in January, is that, quote, the proposal for this investment comes from a president who campaigned on a pledge to reduce and seek to eliminate nuclear weapons, and who won a Nobel Prize for his apparent sincerity. Apparent it was. It's high time that the people of the world demand that President Obama give back that prize. And that's been my way of putting in perspective the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon in September 2001, 15 years later. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.